Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and Batman. My name is Dan Moore, and I am joined, as always, by my compatriots. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Golly, Batman!
You did Batman, so I was trying to do Robin, but then my voice broke, so it didn't work very
well. Nailed it, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
Way to go, Boy Wonder. Guy English is
Brady,
also...
This very Brady episode.
Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy. Who could forget that classic Batman theme?
Yeah.
Hey, as you may have gathered,
okay,
we're here to talk about Batman.
That's part of, I think that's just part of.
Right. It's just very slow.
Very slowly. Over a number of years.
What you don't know is that if you compress this movie down to a reasonable length, it actually just does.
That's actually how you measure plots, is the thing. It's like it's a plot charting thing. It's like, all right, first it goes da, then it goes da na, and then it goes da na na na, and then it da na 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 na, and you're like, oh, yeah, all right. So that's where the downward action, the upward action.
That's it.
It's all the Batman theme. We are here to discuss The Batman, a movie that came out earlier this year. This year being 2022, hopefully still. well, we have Guy and I have discussed it over on the Mothership, but we wanted to get a chance to dive into it a little bit more with John. And so,
bring the slower students up to speed in the class.
This is my third time. I also chatted with Commodore Decker about it.
Look at this guy. Show.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Man, yeah, I've done a lot of Batmaning. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So
maybe this won't be long.
Yeah. Well, we're not.
Or just be me.
John, would you like to monologue? Yeah. Would you have any opening statements for us?
No. I got a lot of notes, but.
Well, so, Dan and I kind
do
of
a recap, right?
Are we... No, we're not going to do a recap. I don't think
we don't have time for that.
Because we don't have time for that.
It's a 3-hour movie.
It's a long movie.
Yeah. But, so Dan and I know where each other kind of stand. So, why don't you frame the discussion, I guess? You know what I mean? Like, set the tone, and then we'll have fun with
it. Set the tone. All right. I have heard very different things from different, you know, many people seem to have a wide variety of views on this movie. And I find that kind of interesting because a lot of people who saw it early really liked it. Some people thought, ugh, it was too long and too dark. I've since heard this son of a friend of ours, this family who comes over to play games on Saturday night with us. He said it was, I think he's 16. He said it was the best movie ever.
It's an opinion.
I thought it was interesting.
It's also Stairway to Heaven is the best song ever written, and Bohemian Rhapsody is.
I mean, it's okay.
I'm not making fun of 16-year-olds. Just over-aggrandizing anything
the opinions,
is like
the opinions. That
are
I
you
had
making
when
fun
I was
of Stairway to Heaven? Because let's unpack that.
Yeah, yeah. Spend an hour on that.
Well, yeah. After that, we got Hotel California. So.
One thing that that we have already alluded to that seems universally to be agreed upon is that the movie is too long. Right? Do we all agree on that?
It is a long movie, and I think there are definitely things that could be trimmed. I did not, weirdly enough, for whatever reason, in the experience of watching it, and I saw it in the theater, I did not feel that it really dragged for me at any specific parts. Like, just personally, I was never aware of, like, looking at my watch and being like, Jesus, how much time is left in this movie? I was caught up in it enough that did not bother me. That said, it certainly colors the, like, idea of sitting down to rewatch it and being like, oh, man, 3 hours is a long time. Yeah, I don't think it necessarily squanders that time too badly, but it is something where if I were like thinking about it, like in retrospect, yeah, there's some trims you could probably make, but I think kind of what he set out to the story that was set out to be told is, you know, it's a longish story, and I don't think he's like too indulgent in sort of side treks or whatever that really bog it down, but yeah, it's hard to sort of deal with a 3-hour movie.
I have seen it thrice.
9 hours of your life, guy.
A lot. Yeah, I know. Don't make me do the math.
I just did it for you.
It was relatively easy.
It sets a deliberate pace. The first time I watched it, I was sort of annoyed by the... It started getting into the third act, and he started fighting people at the arena. And I was like, oh, for the love of God, can we just finish this now? But the way it turns out in the arena saved the movie for me. Previously, I thought it was a sort of a well-done dark thriller kind of thing, but, you know, as we've sort of laid out, that's not the only way to do a Batman, and I kind of would have liked a different take on it. The end recontextualized most of the movie for me, and this is why I've wanted to talk to you so much about it, John, is I was really curious what it would do for you.
I like that turn at the end. Some people I talked to said that he doesn't have an arc in this story, and I don't think that's true, because that is the arc, right? I mean, he goes from being vigilante to being superhero, basically. When I rewatched it, I was like, there's that fight at the beginning where he beats up those thugs who are attacking some guy coming home from work, right? And there's that scene, you know, the bit at the end is the guy is also afraid of him,
right?
You know, because he knocks out all these guys, and then the victim is saying, please don't hurt me. And I was like, oh, come on. I mean, this is supposed to be Batman. But that's the story that they were telling.
Yeah.
And I like that part about it. Like, I like it that he is just a vigilante. He's out there just cracking heads because he's vengeance. And he realizes by the end that there's more to, you know, there's a better way to be. There's a way to be Batman that provides a little bit more hope and is more uplifting for both the community and for himself.
Yeah.
I agree. It really did save it for me, and I don't mean that in a... It's not like I hated it. It just wasn't a movie I cared for. And the reason I saw it twice in the theater was because of that ending. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and not be a grump watching all of the beginning bits. Because I was getting grumpy. I'm like, okay, come on. You're beating people up. Like, you're taking bullets to the face. And I'm like, it's a little... I get it. It's stylish. It was beautiful. And I enjoyed it... For the aesthetic that it was and for what it was. But it was that ending that really made me go back and be like, you know what? I do want to watch this again, despite it being kind of long, because I want to pick up on what they were laying down previously, you know? So,
yeah. And I think I missed, like, I enjoyed the end the first time I watched it, but I don't think I had put it all together, that arc in my head, until the second time I watched it.
You have watched it twice.
Okay. I have watched it twice, and like I said, the second time I sat down to watch it, I was kind of like, I was grumpy. Like, I was like, oh, I gotta watch this damn movie. Because, I don't want to jump ahead, but it's not my favorite, for sure. I still like the Batman Begins, I think is still my favorite.
Solid choice.
There are things that I really like about this movie. That story is one of them. I love his costume. I think his costume is fantastic. That might be my favorite one. I'm not big on the batarang on the chest thing, but that's okay.
Yeah. It's very Moon Knight.
Exactly. Yeah.
It kind
stay
of
in your lane, Batman.
Yeah. Stop ripping off Moon Knight.
The fact that it has utility kind of, I can't decide if it gives it a pass or it makes it cheesy. I really enjoy the way that he uses it to cut the police tape. Like, that's pretty funny because, you know, he doesn't kick down doors or just rip it with his hands. He, like, uses his bat knife.
It's a metaphor about Batman cutting through red tape. I'm kind of with you. No. I mean, like, on the one hand, I think the issue in a Batman story that largely feels grounded is having the bat symbol on the chest feels like branding, which is a thing that a superhero is, especially starting out, is probably not really doing. But I agree with you that there's the utility angle. In some ways, I would have preferred if the suit were even a little more bare bones in some ways, given that this is like the early Batman. I think of the season one Daredevil suit, right? Like, where it's very... Yeah. It's not even utilitarian so much as it is just like, well, I just need stuff to move around in.
And it's utilitarian
in that regard. And it covers his face, right? Like, that's literally it, right? And so certainly he's already got the cowl and everything, so there is clearly an image happening. But I enjoyed how much of the movie, Guy and I talked about this a little bit on the other show, but how much of him in this movie is not wearing the costume and instead accomplishing things even as Batman, but like dressed in like a hoodie or dressed in a very like street clothes sort of things, because I think that is an interesting image and sort of feel that we haven't really gotten in previous movies.
It's one of the things I really liked about the first, maybe second series season of Arrow too, like when Ollie's just ollieing around in civvy clothes, like it's cool. Like that actually makes sense. And so I like that, you know, even when he's going into the club as I think the final time he goes into the club, he's sort of undisguised. Like it doesn't show up as Bruce Wayne, but you know, and he's got those guys are crappy bouncers. Cause if you walk in with a Batman suit under your baggy clothes, my God, there are so many weapons in that club. It's just not even funny.
I mean, this is a silly thing, and people have complained about this, I think, but I like the black eye stuff, you know, the makeup around his eyes. I mean, it's sort of goth and plays up his moodiness, but it's actually realistic too.
Right, exactly. Because
all the other Batman have actually had that on. And then when they take the cowl off, it's magically gone.
Yep.
Also, the complaints that Batman is too goth are kind of hilarious to me. Like, come on. It's a guy that dresses up like
he's a
bat.
He's a literal Batman.
I guess so. Okay, so we've all sort of established where we stand on it.
I mean, I could go through the stuff that I hate about them.
Well, let's not do a recap.
Most of my notes are complaints, I will say.
Well, but you write down a lot of stuff where you're like, I love this moment. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like when you're caught up in a movie, you write down less stuff.
Like Zoe Kravitz, I think, is great. I mean, and I think partially it's because she stands out because she's given the most range and she handles it really well in this movie. Whereas he's just like brooding for 3 hours and they don't give Robert Pattinson like enough emotional range, I don't think, in this movie.
I don't think the character as we see him has emotional range. I think that's intentional. I don't think they underwrote him. I just think that he's a really broken guy and it doesn't get through to him until the end kind of thing.
But even at that point, he's not very emotive about it particularly. I mean, I think Christian Bale is a little bit more human.
Well, but they give him, I mean, that character is written very differently, I think, to Guy's point, right? Yeah. Like we have the whole thing with Christian Bale where we've got his whole backstory and we get his, you know, his Playboy image, right, that he's playing up. And like, that's kind of a more traditional view of Bruce Wayne, certainly. Yeah. And I think Pattinson is a capable actor, having seen him in other stuff. And I kind of agree. Like you're both right about this, I think. Right. Like, I mean, he doesn't have a lot to do, but in some cases that he's doing what is being asked of him, and whether or not that's the right thing.
I'm not really a fan of what was asked.
Totally fair.
I don't think. Sure. Yeah. So that's, again, I think I feel the same way. Again, I think that that's where the end works for me, is that you can see a second in this series where he is a bit more affable, right?
I would like that. Like, I don't think they'll do that though. I don't have faith that they will do that.
Well, I didn't have faith
they invest so much in the broodingness of this movie that if they come out with a movie that is not like this, then the people who really like it are not going to like that movie.
It's always a tricky tightrope walk, right? Like, I mean, the next movie is not going to be Adam West Batman, certainly.
No.
But yeah, I don't know. Is there an arc there that you can do?
Robert Pattinson run around trying to get rid of a bomb.
He kind of does that, doesn't he?
Kind of.
That's like this entire movie.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, this is the only Batman I can remember that we've seen putting in the work saving people. Like, he stays there all night after that. Maybe we should do this in order a little bit, but let's just focus on the end. After the flooding, after the attack, after everything, he stays there all night helping people, which is like carrying people and putting them on stretchers, which I've never seen another Batman.
He definitely does the most. Christian Bale saves a bunch of people. Certainly throughout the three movies. Yeah. I mean,
stopping a nuclear bomb is definitely a big thing.
Yeah. Saves a lot of the people in the, I can't remember the name of the the area that is being flooded with the gas. In the Narrows, yeah.
Yeah, but he does it by punching somebody in the face rather than helping them, like, just spending the work.
He helps that kid.
Okay, you're stretching here to try to...
One kid is worth at least $100.
I don't disagree with you. He does help people, but, like, but this guy's, like, he just feels like he's been walking back and forth carrying people to stretchers all night, you know, with the guard there. Like, not like I grabbed you and got you out of the way of a bomb, which, sure, that's awesome. But it's like he didn't just leave in the night. He worked at it, which I thought was cool.
And
gave me hope for the future.
Not to be too speculative about what another movie might do, but I think one interesting point that they hit in this movie, although they don't dwell on it kind of as much as I think would be interesting to me, is the Bruce Wayne also as somebody who has kind of pulled himself out from engaging with the city as his own persona, right? Like the point that he has the conversation with the mayor where the mayor's like, I've been trying to get you, like, because I want your help, essentially, like revitalizing the city. Right. And I could see an arc with this where he realizes, you know, maybe there's stuff Bruce Wayne could be doing in addition to stuff that Batman could be doing. And that is a potential sort of like eye-opening moment for him. You know, like, it's the equivalent. Batman putting people on stretchers is kind of like Bruce Wayne working in a soup kitchen, you know? Like, he's doing the work, right? Like, he's actually, you know, maybe showing up and actually helping people, you know, person by person.
Mm-hmm. Or Ollie buying back all the guns. Which,
why hasn't Bruce simply bought all the guns in Gotham? And I just that really... problem. Fix everything.
Because he's spent all that money on a bulletproof suit.
the suit's a little much.
It's one bulletproof suit, John. How much could it cost? $10?
Oh my God. So much money.
Okay, let's kind of have some structure about this rather than just randomly talking about whatever kind of crosses our mind. We are introduced to him cowboy style, right? Like he's you know, gunslinger walking out of the shadows.
I'm already grumpy because by this movie, because it's Halloween, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone is wearing creepy Halloween outfits. Not a single person in the crowd is dressed as ironic, you know, Japanese businessman with a card on his chest saying what he is. It's the most dour thing you could imagine. Everyone is completely dressed as something scary. And it's not realistic. That's one of my big complaints about the stuff. A lot of the stuff that happens in this movie is just not realistic.
But I'm okay with that.
It drives me bananas.
I get it.
It's not realistic in the service of making the movie seem dour and making the whole thing bleak.
I mean, there's a stylistic
Tim Burton's
choice.
Wasn't realistic either, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of where I think Dan and I are sort of in agreement
on
this.
I missed it.
It's a stylistic choice. Tim Burton's was also not realistic, but...
Yes.
And it was going for a different tone. I mean, it's raining all the time. It is constantly night. sure. Yeah, well, I guess what I'm asking you is...
That movie was clearly like being comic booky.
Yeah,
So it's not to your taste, but did you find it bad? Like, was it a poor rendering of the thing, or was it just something that you didn't?
Something I didn't like.
I think we can agree.
I'll tell you that much.
To sort of like refine what Guy is saying, I think we can agree. Choices were made, right? Like they made definitive choices about how they're going to portray the city and the atmosphere and all of that.
I said that it was because, you know, they're trying to make it bleak. And I think this incident is an example of that. But there are other incidents where things happen that are just, I think, unrealistic and dumb.
Okay.
And not serving the bleakness, more serving like, I don't know,
the aesthetic
imagery or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, to jump ahead, there's that scene where he spray paints the floor in tower, I guess. Like, who's coming in to like sand the floors later?
Alfred, after he gets unblown up.
Yeah. so he's like, I mean, he's spray painting the floor. Like, why is he doing that? That it's just so stupid. It's just so he can stand there in the middle of the Riddler's symbol. And it's just like, oh, come on. Mm. It took me out of the movie.
Fair enough. Yeah. Although, Elon Musk would do that.
I had the exact same thought. I don't feel good about it, but I had the exact same thought.
I know. I didn't even want to go with that joke because I can't be bothered to touch any of that mess. Well,
in the sense that this character is just does not give a crap about, like, oh, it's like a priceless, you know, really nice floor that we put in. Yeah, whatever. I need a place to work here. And
I just feel like, practically speaking, I mean, first of all, Alfred's in the freaking hospital. Like, don't worry, my butler, who's dying right now, will clean this up when he gets back.
Yeah,
but I can kind of see this Bruce Wayne, like, having, like, just not really thinking about it, I guess, is the thing. Like, you know, I totally agree with you. It's totally impractical. It doesn't make any real sense.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a moment of, like, this is not a guy who gives a crap about what his floors look like or who's going to clean his floors. Like, he'd be like, I guess I'll put a rug over it or something. Yeah.
To go back to the incident, the beginning incident. So there's this group of this gang, and they're all sitting around on the subway. And then later, when he starts attacking them, the head gang member pulls a machete out of his pants. It's like, how is that guy sitting down with a machete in his pants?
Look, it's Gotham's really bad. Okay,
I feel like. Have we spent 5, 6, 7 years talking superhero shows? Because I feel like you're just finally getting the memo.
Like a collapsible one, I wouldn't have liked, but I would have understood that.
Yeah, I get it. The aesthetic of Batman is kind of weird.
I just wanted to say they cut that scene where they explain that he has the collapsible machete. It was in the longer version, but you need to get it down to 3 hours.
Yeah, there was a 4-hour version.
Yeah, it would have been better if, like, some ancient Egyptian god had given it to him. That would have made some sense.
Exactly. Tell me where it comes from.
So, yeah, I agree. I liked the setting up of the Batman as, like, a something that everybody's scared of, right? You know, like, the symbol is enough to dissuade crime.
Like I said, when I watched that the first and second, like, even when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh god, I don't like this. And I got the picture, right?
Right.
And when I got to the end, I was like, okay, wait, now I get it, because they're showing that arc, and I like that arc, so.
Yeah, because by the end of the movie, I mean, it's not explicit or anything, but you get the sense that he doesn't want that sign, the bat signal, to inspire fear so much as hope or confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
definitely fear in the guys that are doing bad stuff, but he doesn't want it to be, like, around every corner, something can just jump out at you and maul you, regardless of what you happen to be doing, you know?
Right.
I sort of like the drop head concept in that we didn't really get into the drug at all. It was just, you know, it felt like it was supposed to be Oxycontin type thing, like a maybe not prescription, but whatever. It was just a generic street drug that, you know, that was that was cool. The guy at the beginning having literally a drop head for his Halloween costume was kind of funny in that it felt very much like a Frank Miller 80s style Batman thing, you know, like having a Batman comic where there's a thug that's dressed as some kind of like drug themed goofball. It's very on the nose, you know. It feels like the mutants from Dark Knight Returns type
right
vibe.
right.
I was not super pleased with his, like, just walking in like a gunslinger felt a little much to me. It didn't feel Batman-y. Like, I want my Batman team to just show
to the fight or where?
To the fight in the beginning. Like, I kind of want him to either come from the shadows like he does in Batman Begins, which is awesome. That was an amazing scene. Or stand there fully lit from behind being like, ta-da, I'm a superhero. And you're just run, just drop and run kind of thing. You know, like one of those two things, just walking up. But he's not that character yet, right? He's trying to build fear.
So I was gonna say, but I think it works. I think that works okay because he's only interested. He's mostly there to beat the crap out of these guys.
Yeah, I think that's it. He wants to beat them up. And you know, I think he certainly by the end he sees the futility of that. What is his motivation at this point? Because we didn't have the benefit of going back like Batman Begins and seeing I mean, we really did not.
I think it's his bad childhood, right? I mean, I think it's just you damaged. Think?
What?
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, like, he's damaged and he's trying to fix it the only way that he knows how, which is punching things because...
Yeah,
because
we get the...
Feel better, right?
Because we get that little angry. Voiceover, right? Yeah. It's like year two of doing this and the city's only got worse, which I feel like, yeah, dummy, like, what do you think is going to happen,
right?
You know?
Well, yeah, because it gets down to the whole thing about, you know, like, Bruce Wayne, billionaire, could buy the city... buy the city out of its problems, but instead he spends it all on bulletproof suits and running around and beating up criminals.
Here's actually right. Here's a thread that I think we can sort of start pulling on. His parents tried that, right? With the fund, mm-hmm. whose name I'm gonna forget. Not the
renewal or
better fund. Renewal. Something like that. Yeah. Rejuvenation. It could be renewal. Renewal fits. It feels like right. Anyway. Arguably, his folks tried that, and it failed. And so he thinks that doing that, going down that path is pointless, so beating the crap out of people may... I don't think it's a logical thing. I think it's certainly driven by his desire for vengeance and to take out his anger upon the criminal element of Gotham City. But I can see him... I can see him convincing himself that beating the crap out of people dressed as a bat makes sense, given that the alternative didn't work for his folks.
Well, and he's got, I mean, he's still, though we don't necessarily go into the whole, you know, his parents getting killed, thankfully, because...
Well, we do. It's just off camera. We don't
right,
have to
that's
see
my point, is we don't, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. We don't go into that in the sense that the movie does not dwell on it in a, right. In a way that it puts on screen, and that's a actually kind of a refreshing change for a Batman story, right? No string of pearls falling to the ground, and you know, poor Bruce being in an alley. I appreciate that aspect because, again, everybody knows who Batman is. You don't have to explain this. But it's still a fundamental element of his character. And so having somebody who is dealing with trauma in that way, you know, that is always the sort of background to Bruce Wayne is, yeah, something messed him up as a kid and he thinks there's a particular way of dealing with it. And some of that is, you know, taking out his anger issues. 90% of that is taking out his anger issues. So, I think that's, to me, that's sort of a take is given. Situation for why he is doing things the way he is doing them, at least at this point in the story. I don't know. That seems to compute for me.
One of the interesting things that I believe is original to this script or story is Martha being in Arkham. She was at Arkham Asylum, and B, her last name, her maiden name is Arkham. That was interesting to me, like the notion that Bruce is the son of, let's say, the enlightened nobility of the city, as inherent by, or you know, that Thomas Wayne sort of represents, and you know, obviously the Arkham family seems to be an established, another rich family, but certainly the name Arkham has come to mean crazy to us, right? Like the asylum and like the darkness of it. And so having the character be from both sort of the light side and the dark side is an intriguing addition to Bruce Wayne that I had not seen before. And I think it worked kind of well. Certainly the fact that his mother had mental health issues helps explain his own sort of obsession a little bit, you know, like you can kind of get from, you can draw a line between the two and be like, okay, I kind of get this a little bit now. What did you guys think about that?
I don't know his father too much from the comic books. I mostly just know him from, wasn't he a Batman at some point? Was that just alternate universe?
In Flashpoint, Bruce gets shot in the alley. Thomas becomes Batman, the Batman.
Okay.
And
okay,
Martha
so
becomes...
That's an alternate.
Yeah, Martha becomes a Joker, basically. Because they go crazy in different ways, you know?
Yeah, okay. All
right. This is Flashpoint, the comics.
But he was involved with the Court of Owls?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I mean, there's a lot of different takes on it.
Yeah.
I'm mostly used to the image of his father as like a saint, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So this was a little weird because, okay, his father was good, but he also like got involved with criminals in order to protect his wife and her reputation and yada, yada, yada. So that was like, and then like that felt like, I'm not sure how much I
sullying
liked that
him
much.
For the sake of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was okay. And I do, and I think I agree with you though about, the effect of noting her mental troubles, and it helping to explain Bruce's.
Yeah. Like it.
That's actually, you know, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really know what her issues were, which I'm kind of glad because I didn't. We don't really need to know. Right? But like, yeah, and it's kind of not relevant.
An hour-long flashback, and
yeah, but
well,
it's also
relevant
a little
detail is that it happened and that it is something that was kept secret, and
right,
that is the point of that as a from sort of a plot point perspective,
right? But also the fact that Bruce may have been affected by that just through the behavior of his mother growing up. And he wouldn't necessarily have a framework to understand what was going on or, sort of similar to what we saw in Picard this season, which was not handled incredibly well, but of a type, right? Like that kind of, home environment. So I sort of appreciated that. I kind of like that his dad was a good person, like you were saying, and got roped into a bad situation, sort of trying to do the right thing and not really realizing that he was playing with fire. And I also liked that it is still not. Did you guys think that we got a satisfactory answer for who killed the Waynes?
I like the way
Falcone
they
says one and then it's kind of the other. And yeah,
it was, I like that it's not answered.
Me too.
I
suspect it was Falcone, but I don't know.
It
seemed like they were leaning toward that, but
I think the movie is very clear to be ambiguous about it, and I like that aspect of it because I don't feel that it's important, and the fact that he never is going to know, and therefore, to a certain degree, that helps, I think, nudge him towards the, like, well, I'm realizing that his way of doing things isn't working, right? Nothing he's ever going to do is going to help him figure out what happened or make sense of what happened or undo what happened. Doesn't matter. Right. Doesn't matter if he finds the person who did it or if he never figures out the person who did it. It's not going to change what he needs to do, which is evolve and come up with a better way of handling things, right? And I think that's telling to me is because it's the kind of thing that helps nudge him along that journey that he's making is like, I can't change the past, right? So exacting vengeance isn't going to help me or help my parents or anybody. It's just, you know, continuing sort of the cycle. So I like that aspect of it. I'm a fan of, you know, there's places where you can tell that creators have just not made a decision about something because they just want to sort of like throw, oh, well, you know, it's not important. Let's not make a decision about this. But I think they concretely made a decision to not make a decision on that to not tell us. And I appreciate that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do too. Yeah. I mean, some level of mystery and it's a detail. And like you said, it's a detail that doesn't matter. But like they could have said, oh, it's Falcone. And that would have been less satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
And unnecessary.
Yes. Yeah. He's already a bad guy. We already don't like him. We don't need to pin Bruce's parents' murder on him. It's the same thing with making the Joker the person who killed his parents, right? Like,
yeah, that
was dumb.
You don't need that. You nobody needs that,
right?
Yeah. Oh, we do need Michael Keaton more in the world, but we don't. Michael Keaton deserved Michael Caine as his Alfred. Although the Alfred that he had was pretty great. I liked him a lot. I forget the guy's name.
Yeah, I forget the guy's name too.
Yeah, Michael Goff, I think.
No, that was it. Yeah, Michael. Wow, that's a great memory. Yeah,
I don't know why. I remember that, but I do.
you're kind of weird, Dan.
I am kind of weird that way.
Yeah. So it's year two of Batmaning. I like that he mostly goes around on his motorbike. That's cool. I like that.
Matt Reeves must really like motorcycles.
Yeah, it's far more practical when you think about it, right? Like, yeah, it does make a lot more sense if you're a vigilante. It's fine. Same reason Ollie did it, right?
Like, I was just about to say, I mean, I am.
That's the easy way to do all this stuff. You can go in and out of, like, you can get into tight spots. You can, I mean, you don't need a car.
You can, but, let me give you one reason.
A car becomes a liability.
One reason above all else that having a motorcycle is an advantage. Parking. You can't double park the Batmobile, people.
Too, right.
Yeah. You get the feeling he could probably hoist it onto the roof if he really wanted to.
Sure.
With his crazy grappling gun
have
thing.
Have it fly off.
Yeah, so like we said, I like when he's skulking. Well, I don't like when he's skulking on the roofs like a creeper.
That was another note that I had. I was like, he's just like creeping on Catwoman. That's a little weird, but
yeah.
Right, so I wanted her to suit up, disappear, and then show up behind him.
You know? Right. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a good comic booky type thing. So, because he's definitely like, do not do this in real life. That is creepy as hell, and you should go to jail. Like,
also, at again,
least no matter what happened to no matter what happened to your parents.
Again, guy who dresses like a bat.
I know. But
I mean, that's more of a joke than a real complaint. It's just
I think his emotional inertness almost disarms that from being like a creeper thing, because he's not he is not interested in sex or anything at all. Like, I mean, not booze.
Later he is, but
later. But like, just as a character thing, he is so inert that you don't get the sense that he's even remarking that he's like watching a woman. He's just watching a thing. Like, actions happen so that he can like achieve a goal.
He's at work.
He could be bird watching. That's literally, it wouldn't make a difference. It would be the equivalent to like.
Yeah. And it also mirrors the Riddler that we saw earlier.
Yes.
Which,
what if Batman's parents had been killed by birds?
Then he would have become Birdman. Wait, hold on. Never mind.
Michael Keaton. It always comes back to Michael Keaton. Around. So I'm going to try to anticipate your hit list here, John. The Riddler. Yay or nay? That's a dumb question. In what way was he a nay?
Yeah, do you support the agenda of the Riddler? I think is what Guy's asking you.
Oh.
Was that really?
Yeah. Are you voting for the Riddler for the new?
Yeah. I am not.
No.
Guy's a little bit unhinged.
He's clearly onto something.
I think he's a little much. There's that scene where he's just sort of standing there and the mayor's walking back and forth, and then he's very noisy about killing the mayor and nobody hears it. There's a few other people, like, I'm just going down my notes. He's got a map under his carpet, and the map under his carpet has blinking lights on it where the bombs are. I mean, I don't even know how that would work. He had to recess them in the floor to like what is going on here? But he was fine. I was not very excited about him. I thought it was overdone. I thought they made him too. I mean, he doesn't need to be wearing a suit, you know, covered with question marks, a green suit with purple question marks or anything like that. I don't need him to be cartoony. But the duct tape was a little much.
I just thought it was
overblown for the sake of being overblown. I don't think it really added much to, like, in a way. I mean, like, I think the best part of him was when he's in, except for the question mark in the coffee. It's like, that's not like, did he make that? That's not how, what did he ask the barista? Just why? His sort of creepiness there was fun.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying.
In a way, I liked him. I liked him more out of the whole costume and everything, better than.
Right. When
he's skulking around and being a weirdo.
I think I maintain my favorite scene with him is the scene where he's, they find the live stream that he's done to all his copycat followers, because it's weird, but also kind of chilling in the mundanity of some of it. Right, because it's like him being like, "Hey guys, you know, I'm doing this," and you're like,
"Yes,
that's creepy," but it is to me, the thing that...
And he says something... Doesn't he say something about liking and subscribing or something?
Yes, I think exactly.
There's a reference I mean, in there about that, which is, you know, it is very much like it's a YouTuber.
Right, but it's also chilling because you look at some of these things, recently, mass shootings, and you're like, this is kind of who these people are. And that, to me, is the thing that was the most effective about him as a villain, was that he's not necessarily... Yeah, he's a weirdo who leaves clues and has all this, you know, makes all these bombs and whatever. But like the normal mundane part of it was more frightening and effective to me than the rest of it, because it was just like, he could be anybody. He's just this guy.
Yeah.
And like Rachel Gould is not doing that. Cool.
Yeah. Another complaint I heard people saying was that the riddles were not that difficult, but I don't fault them for not coming up with them. You know, like spending another year trying to figure out super difficult riddles. I do like it that Batman gets them first, except for the one, which the Penguin has to explain to
people. It's one of my favorite scenes is when the Penguin's like, world's greatest detectives. Like, he's just totally making fun of them.
Because they
boneheaded it. Like, he's totally right to make fun of them. It's great.
It's kind of funny. And then, all of a sudden, he's like, oh, I know what that is.
I thought that, you know, I'm kind of with you. I don't worry too much about the riddle thing, if only because I feel confident that in a lot of those scenarios where people are like asked to decode a riddle, they don't care. The cops don't care. They're like, we're not going to solve it. Like all those officers in all the rooms and everything, like, they're not there to solve riddles. So like, I can see why, you know, maybe Bruce Wayne or Batman is just like, I don't know. I just think about riddles more. Like, I just,
and the one that he does, another one that like he doesn't get teasers. Is the other one that he doesn't get kind of makes sense because it's blue collar. It's a blue collar.
Yeah.
Because it's about putting in carpets or ripping out carpets or whatever, one or the other. And yeah, it's like, of course, Bruce Wayne wouldn't get that.
Yeah.
Guy's never worked a day in his life.
Yeah. I kind of like, Catwoman's always telling him, like, that's the world actually works like this. Like, you don't know how things work. Here's how it actually works, which I really like too, because he's a bonehead. He's a rich bonehead that goes and beats people up, and he's decently good at that, but not so great at solving stuff. Sorry, I cut you off there.
That's okay. I was just gonna say, like, talking about the Riddler, there's a few things that I don't understand about his plan. Like, the riddles are fine for me, but the like, he tries to blow Bruce Wayne up, but then he sort of thought that he was working with him. Did I miss something about that?
No, he doesn't know Bruce Wayne is Batman. That's the thing I kind of love about that. He thinks...
You don't think he knows that at all?
No.
Because he's
no.
yelling his name at him later in the...
He's
No, he's saying that he was
got,
one of
I the... got the sense that he knew Batman was Bruce Wayne.
No, there's this really... I actually really love this scene, because the whole scene unfolds when he's interrogating him at the end. Is Bruce worried that he knows who he is? When in the end, it turns out he wasn't... He was like, the Riddler was just trying to kill Bruce Wayne because he thought he was a symptom of the problem, like everybody else that he tried to kill. And he doesn't know that Bruce is Batman. He's like, I'm working with this Batman guy who's out to take down corruption.
So I misinterpreted that. I'll have to go back and watch.
Yeah, that scene is. I think that
I got
scene
the
is,
wrong point out of him saying Bruce Wayne's name over and over again. I mean, I got the point that Bruce was worried about it, but I thought he did actually know.
No, I think I read that as him being more like, he was the last sort of one that he was going to take out because of his role in the, you know, being related to the foundation and all this stuff. And I think it's a nice, for me, what I enjoyed about that is it's a good misdirect, because you do go in like Bruce thinking like, okay, this guy's, he's figured it out. He knows who I am. And they realize, he's just crazy.
Yeah.
He's just
like
crazy. Okay.
Bruce leaves the crime scene being like, you're a good cop. Like, he's pretty sure the jig is up. And so he goes to see him, and like, the fact that he's moaning Bruce Wayne or whatever, he's complaining about Bruce Wayne, really sets you off. And the first time I saw it, I thought it was ambiguous, but after I watched it the second time, I'm like, yeah, he's just really kind of bonkers. Like, he's not
okay.
You think he's playing with him more than he is. He's not as smart as he thinks he is, the Riddler. He's done this certified accounting thing and discovered malfeasance in the with the whole renewal project and all of that. But he is not super detective. He has no idea who Batman is, other than he thinks he's a kindred spirit who wants to.
Yeah, he definitely thinks that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I won't. So I retract that complaint. The other complaint, though, is the whole bring him into the light thing. I mean, it's like Falcone was not really a recluse. He went to the mayor's funeral, and it wasn't like the Riddler couldn't have shot him some other time. And so that whole thing was just like a setup so that he could do it in person and get caught.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he knew that, like, he was going to bring him out, bring him right underneath that streetlight. That seemed, again, overly elaborate just to set up some sort of good shot, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
In both senses of the term. I mean,
it does feel a very much like a convoluted plan that a supervillain comes up with.
I found it a little too convoluted, but
that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, it wasn't the worst part. Seeing it the second time, I was struck by it. Like, that seems like crazy complicated and unlikely.
And he is camped out. He camped out. He has an apartment right across the street. So, mm-hmm. like,
but he doesn't know where Batman's going to go after him. He doesn't. I mean, because like I said, like it's not like Falcone was holed up in that place and needed to be brought out because he was going out and doing stuff all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he's
going to clubs. He was going to events. He was.
Well, wait, the club's in the basement of their building, though.
Oh, is it? It's okay. Oh, that's right. That's right.
But yeah. Still, so he's on the top.
It wasn't like, yeah.
He's on the top. The Iceberg Lounge is on the bottom. And then in the basement is like whatever the other one they call it, the super secret evil club.
Yeah.
44 below, I think, like that. Something like that. Who knows? Anyway, like, for as big as the city is, it's kind of tiny. Like, it's just in that one block radius. Because I think the GCPD is, like, right up the street, too.
Well, it's just Edinburgh, right?
Yeah. I think it's is it Edinburgh or Glasgow?
Glasgow? Is it Glasgow? I knew it was one.
I don't remember which one now.
So, moving on to the list of complaints. How'd you feel about
we're getting pretty far down. We're getting very far down, as a matter of fact.
GCPD. I mean, don't dare say anything bad about Gordon, because he's awesome. But
yeah, Jeffrey, come on. Jeffrey Wright is...
Jeffrey Wright's great. Jeffrey Wright's terrific.
The man is a treasure.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was your take on the GCPD, like, in toto and the environment with which Batman interacted with them?
Well, they're typically stupid, of course, right?
Sure. And I mean, they have to. They kind of have to be, right?
That's canon, so that's...
Yeah.
You go in expecting that. I kind of like that weird guy, the guy that hates him at first and then gives him the clue at the, you know, I kind of like the way that guy worked out. And I really love the way he walks into those scenes.
Yeah.
And they're all very upset about it, but Gordon's adamant that he's going to be able to provide some value, which of course he does. And the whole, you know, the escape from the, that was elaborate too, but that was fine. Like, the, you know,
I loved it because it was so basic.
Punches him and
he punches him and then runs. And like,
he runs and he uses his, you know, his Batman skills to get out. So that's what Batman does.
Barely.
Yeah.
I loved how crazy that was.
the squirrel flying squirrel suit scene is another great moment in this because it works exactly the way. Like, we always see Batman jump off buildings, and you're like, oh, that Batman. And they don't show you, really. Like, he'll show you him swinging away or whatever. And they're like, well, but how would this really work, right? Like, if you're Batman, it's like, well, I can do this, but only once, and it better work.
I love the look of fear on his face. Like, he gets to the ledge, and he's like, whoa, what have I got myself into? And he starts, like, zipping himself up. And he totally whiffs it. I mean... you know,
it's not designed to really do that unless you're someone who has trained a lot.
Yeah.
And clearly he's like, well, I've tried this somewhere in like the Swiss Alps or something, but I, you know, only once.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he paid for like 8 hectares of.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Not into a car.
Not into a bus. He hits a bridge and then a bus and then, oh, yeah.
There's a little bit, and I think they kind of use this in, I mean, they don't really draw too much attention to it in Batman Begins, but Year One, that comic book, that Frank Miller run, there's a number of scenes where he just screws stuff up, and those are super fun. I mean, there's, you know,
it's great.
He's catching some guy's stealing something, and he starts fighting them. One of them falls over the ledge,
and he's, he has to grab him,
kill anybody. So he grabs the guy, and then the other guy starts hitting him over the head with a TV set.
I love it.
It's just like, oh my god, could this get any worse?
I love that panel because he manages to, he gets out. Obviously, he's Batman, but like he's just at the end. He doesn't take off. He's just slumped in the corner, like, oh god, I got lucky. I got so lucky. It's great. Yeah, right. And you get that sense here.
I like that about this movie too. You know, man, I love those moments in this movie.
Yeah, for sure. I love the the three ways he tries going into the club. The dumb way. Hi, I'm Batman. Well, yeah, great. See how that goes. A kind of a smarter way, like he shows up as Bruce, wanting some information, which I think is legit, right? Like Bruce Wayne legitimately has a question for Falcone. He can go and ask him. Falcone's not going to kill him. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a rich people, not meet and greet, whatever rich people do to, you know what I mean? Like a,
that's like a celebrity,
an adversarial, like little meeting.
Yeah, it's like a celebrity going
getting
to talk
into the VIP room.
It's like a celebrity going to talk to another celebrity, right? Like, all right, the hill in these, this person will at least know who I am, you know?
Yeah, we get to have a conversation and it's fine. No, nothing too bad's going to happen, but we can communicate kind of thing. And I love, first of all, John Turturro can do no wrong. Like, I saw this great while Severance was still going on, and like I think I watched this and then went home and watched Severance, and I'm like, this guy is amazing. You really like, he's so good. Whatever you see him in, you think that that's kind of all he can do.
Yeah,
and I mean that in the best possible way. When you watch Transformers, you're like, man, this guy's got one gear, and it's this manic, crazy dude chasing Optimus Prime or something, or Do the Right Thing. You're like, man, this guy's really racist. He is just so good at, or bowling and whatever, the Big Lebowski. He's so good. Mm. It is so remarkable. And he, what was the joke? They put, what's his name in, penguin makeup, and all it took was John Turturro to put on a pair of glasses, like shades. Yeah, and it was just a completely different guy. He's really, really great. He's intimidating. He's sincere. And he doesn't come across as stupid. Time.
Yeah. Menacing. Yeah, I love his.
Yeah,
especially like you said, comparing this to Severance, which I watch very, like, nearby this.
Yeah,
in which his character is really just like 180 degrees different, even though all it's doing is John Turturro, right? It's just John Turturro. There's nothing special happening there.
180 degrees of John Turturro.
Welcome to my new podcast.
Can we be on one? I'd definitely do that show.
I want to go back, like I said, as I've noted, Batman doesn't kill. And the caveat to that, and this runs through pretty much all of the movies, is unless there's a car chase.
Yeah, that's right.
All bets are off. If you happen to be driving on the freeway when Batman is chasing somebody, your chances of living are pretty slim.
I love the introduction of the car. I love that the car is something that he's clearly just cobbled together, very unlike the tumbler, right? It's the polar opposite.
It's utilitarian.
It's very utilitarian. Right. And all of that. If there is a scene in the movie that I would cut, it's the car chase, because it feels like it's there to be a car chase. And you could cut 20 minutes out of this movie with that.
That feels like a studio note
also,
for me.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, that scene at the end where he comes, like, there's this very dramatic music playing. You're seeing things from the penguin's perspective. I think it's even upside down. And there's flames in the background, and Batman comes striding forward. And then he leans down.
Like, hey, the leaning down, you okay?
Part, like, is like, yeah. Do you need me to call 911?
That's a pretty bad accident you had there.
Yeah, right. It's very weird. Like, I watched that and I was like, oh man, this is so overblown. And then he leans down and like, and now it's all of a sudden kind of silly for some reason. I love the car. I think they could have cut that scene completely.
Yeah, this is very style over substance sort of use of it, which is a shame because I do, as you know, we talked about the car a little bit, I think way back when they first showed like pictures of it. And it's like, I just enjoy the muscle car with like, I'm just going to strap a jet engine to this and God knows what's going to happen, but it'll go fast.
Yeah.
It feels very,
it's supposed to be year
piece.
Two, but it's, you know, it's very Batman year one.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, this is the first thing you do.
I like that in
military contractor involved.
I like that there's scenes when he's in the Batcave. It's up on, it's like driven up, and he's like clearly works on it, and he tinkers with it himself, and I like that. It's a good vibe. Mm-hmm. I am not a car guy. Even the tumbler, I thought the tumbler was a cool idea until I saw it jumping from roof to roof. I'm like, it's kind of silly. But
yeah, I think it would have been better if it was just a military vehicle,
just a big ass tank.
Like, this is a cool, yeah. I mean, when I first saw the pictures of it before I saw the movie, I was thinking that it was sort of the tank thing from Dark Knight Returns. Like, right. they're gonna do that, and it's not exactly like that. And the jumping part is pretty silly.
Yeah, the jumping part is pretty goofy, especially on roofs. But whatever, it was fine, and it all played as part of the thing. And like I love the scene. Like basically anything with Morgan Freeman's great. So like when he's being all coy about does it come in black? That's great.
Well,
it's a good comedy bit.
The car sales.
Know?
The car sales bit is hilarious.
Yeah. They're screeching around, and he's doing donuts with it in like some top secret lab basement.
In whatever that space is. Yeah. Like, there's just some giant like empty basement in Wayne Enterprises somewhere.
Yeah, but you're not going to ask questions about that because you're like, it's fun. Who cares? Yeah. So this one definitely felt a lot more cobbled together. And I don't get why he drove it there. I don't get why he sat in the car and revved the engine waiting for people to run.
That's the weird thing.
Like, what are you doing?
It's hard. It's there because he needs to have the car chase.
It's hard to start, guys.
It's like, why wouldn't he have the motorcycle?
Right.
That's not a complaint, right? I mean, you wanted this, you wanted the car chase. Of course he takes the car because you need a car chase, but I don't think he needed the car chase.
Agree.
I do appreciate though, at least, it definitely feels like you're right about the car chases being one of those places where the no killing rule just kind of goes out the window. Yeah. Like,
and that's not a complaint about this movie because
it's a complaint about all the Batman
that happened
movies.
Plenty of times in the Dark Knight movies.
If you play the Arkham games, Batman doesn't kill anybody except he drives a tank that has like a gun on it, and you're like, okay,
right.
All there's rockets, there's all kinds of stuff.
All of that is ridiculous. So, so I don't, that doesn't bother me. I at least like the car in and of itself, and at least he's not shooting anybody with it.
Catwoman I thought was very good, incredibly well done. Thought she made a lot of sense. I liked that she had her own story. She didn't do a lot, but she, like, you knew what she wanted. She wanted to find who ended up killing Annika, and that was all she wanted. She kind of used Batman to help her. Mm-hmm. Like, when it coincided, it was good. And she clearly liked him. Like, she was not adversarial to him. But when his goals didn't align with hers, well, she'll kick somebody off a roof, which is very fitting in the comic. And I really loved that, like, even before Bruce has his come to Superman moment where he saves the city, when she kicks him off the roof, he just goes right after the guy that got kicked. Like, he goes to save the life first. That's the only thing he cares about, is save a life. And then he tries to go after her, which I thought was cool. His instinct is there, you know, it's revealed his instincts are there to save somebody, even a bad guy that he really hates.
It should be noted, and I mean, I do think that Zoe Kravitz does a great job. This movie is extremely skimpy on female characters.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's basically Catwoman and the mayor, the new mayor. Mm-hmm. And Annika, who I don't even count because she is essentially there to be murdered. And that's about it. So that that is one place that I feel this movie does fall short. I think, you know, Zoe Kravitz does a great job with Catwoman, but a lot of the stuff is just like on her shoulders. Like, everything's on her shoulders. Like, she has to be representative of like every woman in it's like Gotham City, basically. So one thing that could be improved upon.
So it is, it's riffing off of like a noir kind of vibe, right?
Sure, yeah. She's a femme fatale,
You're right. Unfortunately, the genre has the femme fatale and the murder victim. Like, those are kind of the
naive,
two.
Basically, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. There isn't, there isn't a lot
else. And we don't even get the naive here. Like, she just,
I mean, it's kind of Annika, right? Like, it's...
Well, it is Annika, but I don't think... do we have a scene with her? I can't even remember if
she's,
we see her
never
alive.
Directly. We see her when they're, when he's
in
creeping on the rooftop.
In videotape or something, right?
I think when he's creeping on the rooftop at one point, and then in a phone call, and like, not so much as to even count.
Yeah.
Right.
So that is a shame. And I think there's, I think it's, I like when people do like they take a form and they run with it and they go with it. In this case, you know, like a noir thriller, like a Chinatown or Seven kind of vibe.
It's a very 70s crime gangster thriller, too, a little bit, too.
I like that, except some of the defining characteristics of the genre should be gone. And it's hard to do that genre without honoring the sort of that aspect of it, right? Which makes me think maybe don't go so whole hog on like doing the genre. If you look at your call sheet and you've got Zoe Kravitz and that's it, you know, it's not really great.
I think you could have. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of ways to honor a genre, including stylistic and aesthetic and all of that. And I think this movie does go hard into that, but it doesn't. You could have accomplished the same thing without, you know, replaying some of those.
They could have made the guy that I'm just going to call Mario because he's got a mustache. I think they could have made him a woman with a mustache. That would have been fun. Or
I don't even know Gassin? What character that is.
The cop who's like doesn't like him and is kind of helpful.
Right, right. They could have done that. I think it.
There are a few. I mean, I think there's the woman who takes the picture of the blood stain.
But that's not a character. Cops,
but they don't have any lines.
You could have. One thing that I did think of, and then I've since thought it was a bad idea. Essen from what's her name? I can't remember her first name, but the woman
Sarah Essen
from Year One, who's Gordon's partner, that could have helped. But Batman is Gordon's partner, right. So
You
know,
and there's parts of that story that again don't anyway.
Of course, because he's having an affair with her. There's a bunch, but she has agency, although, and she does get. The short end of she ends up getting sent to another city or something, right? Like some bad
right,
stuff.
I think so.
It's not great, but it is quite indicative of how unfair it is to be a woman in the police force. Like it's, but that's not the point of the story. I mean, we don't have time for that sort of story. And in that, it would only be done short shrift. Not that we shouldn't tell those kind of stories. We definitely should, but this is not the place where it would just get stomped on and done a poor job of.
Agreed.
I guess
I have a couple of other tiny complaints, but I won't even they're not worth getting into because we've already gone over an hour.
Well, wait, okay, why don't you just list them so that I can stew about them for a week?
Okay, so at the very beginning, they're showing quick beats of how bad the city is. One is a beating, the other is an armed robbery, and the third one is defacing a bank with an economic message. And I do not think the third one is in any way equivalent to the first two.
Yeah.
So
I was so glad that he didn't go after
kind of complaint.
Yeah, I was so glad that he didn't go after those guys. That would have really ended the movie.
They're just spray painting a bank anyway.
Yeah.
Batman at some point could follow when the DA comes out of the club. He could follow the DA, seems like a good choice. Instead, he lets the DA get killed by the Riddler as his car horn blares really loudly.
Yeah.
He doesn't get killed, but he gets knocked out at that
point.
He gets
abducted.
He gets killed. He gets blown up later. Yeah. And then at the funeral, there's a guy in the crowd who calls the mayor a rich scumbag. He's talking to Bruce Wayne and he calls the mayor a rich scumbag who got what he deserved. I don't think that guy would get into the church at the funeral for a mayor. It's this guy is just here to I get it, the point, but maybe that should have been at least outside. There's no way that guy would be.
I took it as being open.
This is just another example of how lousy the cops are in Gotham, maybe.
So wait, but that guy ends up being the guy, the reason we need to know that guy's face is he's the guy that gets unmasked at the end and says, I'm vengeance.
Oh, is that the same guy?
It's the same guy.
I missed that.
I didn't. Yeah. I missed that. Yeah.
It's the same guy. Okay, so yeah. Okay. There's a reason that they punched that guy
off.
I just think
he shouldn't be inside the building, really.
Yeah, I mean, I took it as it's a public funeral, so it's all commerce just because blah, 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 democracy. Putting a face on things, kind of thing.
Who would you're just asking? You're completely asking for trouble trying to do that. But anyway, okay.
Yeah, it is Gotham.
I don't think that would happen in a million years in real life.
I agree. Also, superheroes. So
okay, but still it needs to needs to be grounded. And that's an instance of like, yeah, you're already doing all this superhero stuff. Don't stretch my believability in other ways that are not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I've heard John August say a few times is you get like one coincidence a story. And it's often the inciting incident, but like when you start stacking them up, it's like you just.
It's also, I mean, one writing rule of thumb that I've always enjoyed is coincidences are great for getting your character into trouble, but not great for helping them get him out of trouble. Yeah, that feels like a cheat, right? Yeah. So,
Anyway, so, do you want to rate it?
I would. Yeah.
All right.
You want me to go first?
Well, I might as well. I think we should have you go first.
Okay. I'm giving it a John Jr. There's parts of it that I really liked. Like I talked about Bruce's arc. I liked that, or I guess it's Batman's arc. I like that part of it. And like, I didn't appreciate it the first time I saw it and really did that when I got it the second time. And, you know, some of the stylistic stuff I really like. I mean, I love the car. I love his outfit. And a bunch of other things. Some of the stylistic stuff I feel like is just way too over the top and kind of ridiculous. I think there's a lot of, there's a few, you know, places where it stretched my level of believability too far that stood out to me. I mean, just like the spray paint thing just really bugged me for some reason.
Just like, I know how you feel about graffiti, John.
What? Why? Oh my God. What is he doing? Don't do that. I mean, maybe it's because I, you know, I refinished a hardwood floor once. Just like, it's a lot of work. What are you doing? It'll take days to fix that. Okay. But, yeah, so there's just an, and it's also just oppressively, it's oppressively dark, first of all, and it's oppressively long, I think. They could have cut that car chase. I think they could tighten up a bunch here and there. There's a lot of scenes where people are just walking slowly. I kind of appreciate some of those scenes. Like, I mean, like when he's walking slowly into a crime scene and everybody's giving him, everybody's mean mugging him. I like that. I think that works really well. I think that's a good use of time, honestly. But I think there's other places where things could have been cut here and there that weren't necessary. It didn't need to be as long as it was. So I don't know. I mean, I hope I don't know what would happen with another movie with the next one, but I'll watch it for sure. And because I did get enough out of this one that I liked, you know, liked it well enough that I would go see another one. But it just I feel like it was sort of a missed opportunity for me.
Guy, you want to go next, or you want me to?
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Honestly, if you'd given it a biff, I would have asked you to reconsider Doctor Strange, because that one's legit fun. Yeah. And over the, you know, like, So I did not like this movie up until the end, and then it changed my opinion so much so that I went back to see it in the theater again. And I liked it better. I appreciate the aesthetic. It's not an aesthetic that I want to spend a lot of time in, although I've apparently spent 9 hours, according to Dan. So that's that's kind of sucks. But I think it was well done. And if we, I guess the way I see the rating system is like, did you achieve what you set out to achieve? And did I enjoy what you wanted? And I think in that case, yeah, it's like, it's a mild biff for me. Some things could be tightened up. Like, you know, I don't really need the car chase, but that's fine. I liked the deliberate nature of the plot, and I liked the long, slow pace. It did not feel like a superhero movie often. And when it did, it was pretty mild superheroing. If there's anything that actually distracted me, it's like how many bullets this guy can take and bombs he can take in the face. That was kind of annoying. But besides that, pretty good. I think I've learned a lot today about what John's mood was when he watched the movie and how he approached the movie rather than, you know, anything else. But I think it's worthwhile. It's certainly well done. It's what they set out to do. I think they did a good job doing it. Whether or not you like it is, you know, up to your interpretation and what you want from a Batman. Is this a Batman? This is what we said on the other show. Is this a Batman that everybody wants? No. Do we need another dark Batman? Probably not. They did a pretty good job of this flavor of their Batman. So yeah, Biff. Just because I want to say it. If they do another one, I want Clayface to be the villain. But he's an actor, and he's manipulating stuff. You know, he's manipulating stuff from two sides, kind of stuff, and trying to drag up political intrigue. Anyway, that's my take. Not a full-throated Biff, but a good piece of cinema. Like, that's just good cinema in a lot of it. So, yeah.
I think I'm also on the, like, Biff Jr. It just nudged over the edge. And I think part of that, I'll give credit to my expectations, I think, were low.
Yeah,
And I think it beat them handily. We talked about that trailer when it came out, and the trailer did so little for me. And yet, I went to see it, and it beat my expectations by a not insubstantial margin. It wasn't like, oh, this is slightly better than I thought. I was like, okay.
I think the ending is very surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
if it hadn't ended like that, I would be trashing this movie as visually nice, but something I don't care about, you know?
I think for me, I like the aesthetic. I liked it, a lot of deliberate choices. It did not feel like a paint by numbers movie. It felt like this was, you know, people who had an idea and they wanted to tell that story, and they had a vision of what that story was going to look like, and they executed on that vision, to sort of Guy's point. And I feel like, you know, whether or not you liked what they produced, there are parts of it I felt like they would cut, but overall I felt like the execution of the premise was solid. It's not my favorite style of Batman, but it is something that I thought kind of worked for me in the story that it was trying to tell. And, you know, part of that's the arc, and part of it's just the sort of, I enjoyed the detectiving aspects of it. You know, I think this one really does get done a lot.
Goes heavy on the detective, or heavier on the detectiving than anything else that we've seen.
Yeah.
I love that scene where you think he's just staring blankly at stuff like a dum-dum until he gets back to the Batcave and you see that he's actually video recorded everything. And like, oh, it's actually detecting. Good work. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
Yeah. So, you know, it worked for me, I think, in the long run. I mean, I think that is a different take on stuff. In some ways, I would rank it for me above, like, the last Nolan movie, I think, which is also very long and feels like it drags a lot more to me. This one, even though it's longer, felt tighter, in part because the storyline was very concentrated. And one of the things that I liked up until the last act was that it was a small stakes story until we have the thing where the city gets flooded. And like, I get it. I understand where they were going with that, and it was fine. But I liked that it was more of a, like, I don't have to save the city or the world, right? Like, I'm just trying to track down this one dude who's killing people. That, to me, has a certain appeal to it.
I did like that flooding the city is like, Batman can't punch that. There's no there's no punching it. Yeah. You know, and he was too dumb / not fast enough to defuse the bombs. So he's just stuck. The only thing he can possibly do is try to help people, which I liked.
Yeah, and that's what it's there for, which I think I would not like it if it weren't for that.
And I understand the complaints about some of the, you know, the stuff with the other, you know, the Riddler copycats kind of at the end. Again, I found it kind of unsettling in an effective fashion because it so feels topical. Like, that to me is something that it made me uncomfortable, because you're like, this is a thing that could actually happen and has basically happened. Like, it is like in some ways it's cathartic, because you're like, I would sure wish there was a Batman to punch those people.
But on the other hand,
it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's not like a totally mustache twirling plan at the end of it. But there's a lot of stuff that's effective for me in this movie. I don't need a million of them. And I'll sort of reiterate the point I made on The Incomparable, which is, what this makes me want more than anything is sort of this idea I'm coining, the Batmanthology, where it's just like, you got an idea for a good Batman story? Just go tell a good Batman story. They don't have to be connected. They don't have to be anything alike. Mm-hmm. They could each be different in their tone. Just tell an interesting Batman story. And if Warner Brothers wanted to hand the keys to half a dozen different directors and give them chances to tell Batman stories, I'd be here for that.
I would love to see Taika Waititi's back.
Sure. Batman. Yeah. 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 That'd absolutely. I mean, there's everybody. I mean, I still, you know, New York Times writer Jamel Bowie had a great tweet thread years ago about a black Batman and what that would look like. And like mm-hmm. the story behind that. I was like, man, I think that would make a killer movie. They're doing some of the, like, I think they've shown a willingness to open up the property a bit in more ways than some of the other properties. Like they have that Spotify like podcast series with mm-hmm. like Winston Duke playing Batman and like,
which is
like
apparently great.
Yeah. And it's like a totally different world, right? Like it's a totally different take on it. And I'm like, great. You know, frankly, Batman is like, in the same way that we often compare the superheroes to like, you know, Greek gods or Greek myths, right? Like, you know, they've become sort of fundamental storytelling, you know, aspects. So you can remix them and tell them in a bunch of different ways, right? Like you should be able to tell that story in a million different ways with a million different takes and a million different points of view. And I think that's cool. And it's something that Marvel doesn't do, right? And that's the one thing that I think is clever about this potentially from their point of view is like, hey, stop trying to ape what Marvel's doing. It's not working for you. So just go the other direction entirely and be like, hey, we're just experimenting and telling weird stories about superheroes over here. Great. Do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
The Batman. In conclusion.
The Batman.
Dun, 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 dun. And I think I noted this also. I think nobody ever really calls him Batman or even really refers to him. It's just the notes, just I think, are the only thing. And it's like,
the Riddler calls him.
Kind of dug that. I like that aspect of it, where it's not like everybody going like, hey, that's Batman, it's Batman. It's like, no, did you just hear about that creepy dude who dresses up like a bat? Like,
yeah.
Cool. All right. Anyway, all right, we have spent a lot of time talking about the Batman, so long in fact that I don't think we're gonna get to the other things we were gonna talk about today unless
it's
really
we actually had other we had a fair amount of other things. Yeah,
well,
I honestly didn't think this
can we mention the thing that you sent to us just
there was breaking news as we sent this.
Yeah.
There apparently is a Daredevil series in the works for Disney Plus. This is a report from Variety, which I would consider pretty reliable in this sense, and it actually has names attached to it, specifically Matt Corman.
Oh, yeah. Not surprising.
Yeah, Matt Corman and Chris Ord, like, who I know because, as they mentioned, they worked on the show Covert Affairs, which is a show I actually love, so I'm here for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, but we all kind of knew that was coming. I also think, based on the thing, there was a little information spooled out this past week about the Echo show, and having read that, I felt like I don't feel like Daredevil would fit in this. So maybe he is not in that, and this is you know, they're spinning him off into his own thing, which I think is fine. So not formally announced yet, but seems like it's happening.
Yeah. Well, we have nothing to talk about next week,
I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah, me too. And the image that they've got is him in the correct suit. He's got the molt special going on. He looks so much better like this. It's just, it makes sense. It's so slapdash. Like, he looks like a guy that grew up in an orphanage with nuns.
The rope is... They did a pretty good take on that in the comic books too, like a where he had the ropes around his arms, like that was like that year.
It was like
they rebooted everything, right?
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was a black outfit, wasn't it? And then I mean, other than the fact that the DD on his chest was like dripping like it was paint, I didn't like that part, but everything else was pretty cool.
Yeah I think the original rope thing was tape, like fighting tape, like boxing fighters tape.
Oh yeah.
Which makes more sense given the character.
Not considered.
But the rope makes more sense. Like his guards. And
has he not considered like weird, needly looking gauntlets? A la... Yeah.
I kind of like those. I kind of did like them. I don't know why. I didn't in the trailer. I was like, what the heck is going on with this guy? But I like that he had a giant patch. He had a giant patch on his like right thigh. That I don't know what was in there. Probably all the cable for his grappling hook that he shoots pretty long distance. Like, that cable's got to come from somewhere.
It's got to go. Yeah, it's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
It's rough. All right. Well, that is it for us for this week, I think, but we'll be back next week. And as we still have, two more shows before we get into Ms. Marvel, which debuts on June 8th, we'll probably have some time for like a wrap-up-y show. So,
yeah. Well, there's definitely stuff we wanted to talk about this week. There's a couple of letters that we want to get to, and Yeah, so maybe it works out that we took too long this week to actually do what we planned to do.
Everything was planned this way.
Yeah. Right.
It's a carefully constructed.
Yeah.
All right.
Speaking of carefully constructed, sign up for incomparable memberships.
Oh, yeah. No, we should. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
It is incomparable membership month, which means, of course, this is the time that we remind you that you can become a member of the Incomparable, and we really appreciate it if you do so. You know, this is a show that we do for fun, but we also appreciate the support of all of our readers because it's nice to feel like somebody's listening when you're just out there talking
or reading
as well. So, we can remind you, you can sign up to be a member on the incomparable.com/members, and you get access to a bunch of really great perks, including access to many other podcast feeds. We have a bootleg feed where it's like shows right when they get recorded. You don't wait for them to get edited. Like, they're delivered piping hot right into your podcast player of choice. We've got a extra first class feed where it's like bonus member content, stuff that doesn't get spooled out anywhere else, including there's also now ad-free versions of the Mothership, the Incomparable show. And then because it's member month, all of us are doing extra special episodes. So we here at Biff recorded a full length commentary to the 2012 The Avengers, starring Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman. Wait, nope. I'm told that was not The Avengers that we watched. Yeah. So if you want to listen along with us,
you know
the one. Yeah, you know the one.
John just has a running commentary about how unrealistic Thor's hammer is. It's just, it's riveting. Riveting stuff.
Well, the hammer is riveting. go check that out if you're an Incomparable member. You can sign up. We got different membership levels, $5, $10, $20 a month. And you get different perks at each level. And there's even some swag. Yeah, I know you like swag. So I'm just saying. A bunch of the other shows around the network this month are doing specials. And if you sign up to be a member, you get access to all those in addition to all the other stuff. Plus, there's our Incomparable member Slack where you can hang out with other members and talk with the panelists and members. And it's a great community. So, yeah, check it out. And as always, I want to thank my compatriots here at Biff. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
I will be back next week in my classic black and yellow costume.
Oh, thank God. That's a relief. Guy English, always a pleasure.
I still have a concussion from when I smacked my head into a bridge when I jumped off a police station.
Wild.
That guy's indestructible.
Wow.
If I've got a real beef, it's like he's just indestructible. It's too much, you know? But anyway.
Wow.
That's that.
Good to know.
We'll be back to talk about that.
Good to know. I made John feel bad about saying something negative about a movie that he's very on the fence about.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next time. All right. Okay. I'll drink my water.
Do you need a minute? Like, honestly? Like,
no, I'm fine.
Okay. I was a little late because, well, A, I didn't want you hearing the toilet flush, but just prior to that, I've thrown like 4 cornichons in my mouth and called it lunch. So it's.
I went to the bathroom at 3:24, okay? Like a responsible person.
I don't know why we're sharing this information with each other, but sure.
Yeah.
You want to log all your bathroom times? Is that what you're saying?
At his age,
did that for you. Yeah. And didn't even mean to do that. That was weird.
The Apple Watch probably can tell you. All right, I'm finishing. I'm drinking my water. Hold on. Jesus Christ!
45 minutes later, they start the podcast.
I'm recording all of this.
Yes,
so,
no, it's fine. Nobody,
I am too. I think all this should go after the theme.
I should put this at the end. Okay.
Yeah.
Leave them sad.
Leave them not wanting more? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Leave them wanting less.
Always leave them confused.
Always leave them wanting a little bit less. All right. Dialing my volume down a little bit so I'm not totally peaking on those meters. Okay. Let's do this.